If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
I think maybe I'd be good at this. I hope I don't have to pitch you an idea. I hope that this not depend on me coming up with the killer podcast idea.
We asked for the best. About a year ago, we put out the call. Canada Land wants the best podcast makers to send us their best podcast pitches. And we were overwhelmed by the response. Hundreds of ideas poured in from some of the biggest and best names in the business. We painstakingly turned a giant list into a short list, and then we turned a short list into the shows that we have been launching. Pretendians, Field Guide to Gay Animals, and an upcoming investigation called The Kopernik Affair. We asked for the best, and we got the best. And we got Zweig. Our ops guy, Alan Black, he knew Zweig from the world of documentaries. Zweig was an oddball. He'd made a film about curmudgeons. He'd made a film about obsessive record collectors. He'd made a film about ex-cons. So he shuffled into our office one day, this Alan Zweig guy, gray, untucked, looked kind of like Larry David, but without money. He pulled a crumpled list of ideas out of his pocket. This Zweig guy, he brought like a cloud of negativity in with him. But negative to what? Was he sour at us for daring to judge his ideas? Or was he negative towards himself for subjecting himself to our judgment? He was negative towards the ideas themselves. Each one he on himself after pitching it to us before we could even respond. It was like the whole pitching ritual, it was just a part of any creative business, was simultaneously beneath him and beyond him. And then we shook hands and he slouched away. And we looked at each other. Well, Julie Shapiro took a long pull on her cohiba and she said, "Boys, I've been in the podcasting business since you were both using dial-up. I know it when I hear it. Irlon had it. Roman Mars had it. And this guy Zweig, he's got it too." And we sat there like that, in a cloud of Shapiro's green-brown Cuban smoke. We let it all sink in. Alan Zweig. Contemptuous of and disconnected from popular culture. Hosting a celebrity interview podcast. It was the worst idea we'd heard. The worst podcast. "Shapiro," I said, "I'm in." "There's just one problem," said Black. "Zweig doesn't actually know what a podcast is. He literally will have no idea what he's doing." "Not yet," Shapiro said. "That's why we need a guinea pig." I looked at Shapiro. I looked at Black. They were both looking at me. Wait for it.
Alan Zweig.
Yes.
Welcome to your podcast.
Thank you.
It's called The Worst Podcast. And you know what? This is our episode zero. This is sort of like the sneak peek into what the show is going to be like. And Jesse Brown, publisher at Canada Land, will be joining you to talk about the show.
Someday when the show doesn't go, this will be like in a blooper reel of this is how bad it was. Listen.
This will either be the very first thing on the feed for The Worst Podcast, or it will live in a Google Drive somewhere deep in the depths of the internet and never see the light of day.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know which one I wish.
We've just recorded our first, like, official episode. How are you feeling about the show so far?
I feel like, let's be honest, we're going to do 4 or 5 episodes, and you people are going to decide whether I'm going to do more. So if you decide I'll do more, then the next time I do one, it'll be a little easier because mm-hmm. I'll be like, well, I don't know what the I was doing, but if that's good enough. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we did a second season, like on the 20th, I might not be nervous anymore.
Listen, Alan, you keep calling me you people. I'm Katie. I'm your producer. I have zero decision-making power here. Okay. I just do all of the edits. I'm here to have a nice time with you.
So and you're saying say you're hello to slightly more on my side than their
yeah,
side.
Yeah, yeah. Their side being
those people.
I guess,
so from now on,
people.
I'll call yeah. them those people.
Those people. I'm just here to help you make
okay.
the best
okay,
possible
I'm sorry.
Product.
I'm sorry.
I'm your friend, Alan.
I'm sorry I tied you in with those people. Those people.
Okay, speaking of those people, I think we better bring Jesse Brown, publisher of Canada Land and head of Those People, in here to chat about the show.
Okay. Hello, Jesse Brown. Welcome to our show.
Hi, Alan.
So, okay, there's a few elephants in the rooms. Let's try to get rid of those. So, the name of the show.
Yeah.
So, if I had a documentary called The Worst, nobody would say, hey, do you want to see the worst documentary? They would just say, I really like this documentary. What's it called? The Worst. But with podcasts, I feel like I can't say my podcast is called The Worst. I think it's just going to be natural that people are going to call it The Worst Podcast. Do you care? Does that matter? Is that good or bad? I can't tell.
You've lost me already.
Okay. How this happened, that essentially you were part of a decision to give me a show on your precious little enclave, is amazing to me because I don't get you at all. I don't mean, and that's not an insult. I don't get a lot of people.
There were like 3 insults in there. I was part of the decision. This doesn't happen without me making the decision.
Like that.
And then my precious little, it was actually elegant how many insults you fit into that.
That's not an insult. It's funny actually though. So on the way here, I was listening to one of your Canada Land episodes about a cult.
Yeah.
And I thought, do you ever have the thing like I do? Like that person who's the co-leader is pretty dumb. Like, in this case, it was this Filipino woman who's uh-huh. the Queen of Canada.
Yes.
If she can get all these followers, how many could I get? Like, or I was thinking more for you. I think you are totally, totally lined up. You already have subscribers. You could turn those subscribers into cult members. You could marry all their wives.
The opposite is true. First of all, I'm the least adept or well-positioned or well-inclined person to be a cult leader. I've almost created the opposite. Like if you think about what it is to be a Canada Land listener, what do they all say? They all say, I like it, except even with that Jesse Brown. They listen to it despite me.
You know what? You're making the bar way too high. Like you are not as charismatic as Jim Jones, okay? But you're at least as charismatic as David Koresh.
You're a very confused man. Like, David Koresh had people who were willing to die for him. I have people who I pay money to who are not willing to be in a tweet with me. Okay. No one's dying for me. There is an idea that we are trying to get people. It's a very cerebral thing. It's like, I'm going to pay this guy to disagree with me and annoy me. Like, that's a hard service to provide, and it's kind of miraculous that we've gotten so many people to do it.
Okay, well, you're saying to the listeners, you might disagree with me, blah, 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 but I provide a service. What are you going to tell them about me? I provide nothing.
I don't think that's true.
What am I going to provide?
I think that what is incredibly refreshing in a world of automatic bullshit by default, And if it's we're now so itemized that either people are just putting up a facade of very smiley bullshit, or it's this very strange, almost algorithmic rage. So it's a breath of fresh air, and it's worth its weight in gold to have a curmudgeon, to have negativity.
I'm not negative. I just want to point that out. I'm not negative.
You just negated me.
No, that's not negative. That's disagreeable. Maybe I'm disagreeable. Yeah, see, Jesse,
check
again,
your notes. Yeah.
In my notes, what are my favorite synonyms for negativity? Gloomy, defeatist, dismissive, bleak. Bleak. I'm not bleak, but I like that. The one I like, I have a whole list here, but churlish. I don't know what that means, churlish.
I'm not sure if you're churlish.
My favorite one is dyspeptic.
Dyspeptic.
Now, see,
it sounds
in the stomach. It's very
gastro.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. In my film, I Curmudgeon, I interviewed this guy that people in Toronto might know, Bill Grove. He was a jazz sax player. He's an iconoclast. He used to have a very popular jazz show on the Ryerson's CKLN. And he said, and when he says this, he gets gales of laughter. But when I said, you're negative, he said, I'm not negative. I'm just a really disappointed optimist. Mm-hmm. And I think that is sort of actually the most brilliant thing. That, I think, is closer to me. If I was just disappointed in everything all the time, you know, I wouldn't even notice. It's all shit.
I mean, look at the effort that you're making, and at your age.
At my age. That's the other thing. I did have the idea that the only reason you hired me is when I go down in flames, it will demonstrate why you've been ageist all this time. Look what happens when we get an old person.
You know, you say the meanest things. You say you're not a negative person.
I'm just, you know, whatever. I have to do this to defend myself. Because, like, first of all, you're big and you're hovering over me.
Don't be intimidated.
And also, I'm not intimidated, not the right word. More like, I don't trust you. That's probably true.
Yeah.
Is that
the dominant feeling when you think of me, like, distrust?
Well, it's because we had that first meeting where So I come in and I say, look, I hope I don't have to pitch you an idea. I think, like, maybe I'd be good at this. I hope that this not depend on me coming up with the killer podcast idea. And you said nothing.
You hope that getting a podcast did not depend on you having a good idea for a podcast.
Well, is every one of your hosts came up with the idea themselves, or did you hire some hosts?
Yeah, a mix.
To me, this is that I'm even here. Is interesting to me because I don't even know how I ended up doing what I do in films. Like I didn't start off to do any of this, and I certainly didn't start off to be an interviewer, which is obvious because I'm not even letting you talk. So to me, it's just fascinating that I'm ending up like, is this going to work? Like, if this works, that'll be amazing. If it doesn't, I will walk away with my head held high.
I would go even further. I don't even think you know what this is.
No, I don't.
It's your show.
Well, that's, you know what, the thing, here's what I hope.
Okay.
My hope, my great hope. My great hope is that it could run for years and be successful, and at the end, I still wouldn't know. I think that's what you should hope, too. Because as soon as I start knowing, I think it'll suck. Like, I came in today with a script or something because Katie and I talked about it, but I suck with a script. I can't have a script.
Yeah.
I can't look at my notes. I don't know what I'm doing. What are we doing next? Oh, let me look at this page. Like, I can't do that. What am I supposed to ask him? Oh, what's the worst thing anyone ever said to you, Jesse?
What's the worst thing?
Well, it doesn't have to be the worst thing. Just tell me one bad thing somebody once said to you.
And here I wonder if the conceit of the show might be flawed because who remembers? Like,
right.
It's a strange thing because we hold on to things that people say to us. But if you're, but it's not like mentioning my favorite album or something. Like, what's the worst thing?
I think the key conceit of this show is challenging. Oh, I know. I have a list of the worst things anybody ever said to you? Oh, yeah.
I feel like saying anything right now interrupts one of the greatest performances I've ever. I'm just curious how far you could go and how much ground you could cover.
Here's what my idea.
Yes.
Why don't we just call the show The Worst and then do whatever we're doing now?
This works for me. I mean, with a good edit.
Yeah. Thank God. Is it possible that this podcast is the worst idea you've ever had?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's good. That makes you feel better.
I mean, I wasn't lying when I said I was excited by it, but, I have no idea if it's going to work.
Do you feel more optimistic or less than you were an hour ago?
I feel more optimistic. Yeah. I feel like not everyone who sits across from you is going to be as familiar with the way that you talk and think as I am, because you are familiar to me. But I do think that anybody who sits across from you is going to have a reaction. It's going to have a response to you. And I'm endlessly curious as to how people are going to react to you. I don't think I would have been excited about this if I just thought you were negative or a curmudgeon, because if you truly were negative, then what would the point be?
No, I'm not. I'm telling you that I'm a one-trick pony. I can only do what I do. And if you interfere with it with, like, give me some background or knowledge or tell me to do something or here's a question to ask, you just f*** me up.
Do you even listen to podcasts?
No, all the time.
What do you listen to?
You know, podcasts has become for me like streaming television. There's too many choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I listen to things for 5 minutes and I'm like, oh, no.
Who's your favorite podcast host?
I don't have one. I can't even say that. You know,
sometimes. Who do you aspire to emulate in the type of podcasting career that you're embarking upon now?
There's nobody. Here's the thing that worries me. I've listened to some okay podcasts, but they were also boring.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I listened to it. It was okay, but it was boring. I'm not going to say I aspire to be Marc Maron, but I've heard some Marc Maron podcasts that were crackling. He did one with Paul Giamatti. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I like that you use the word crackling. I use that word a lot. That's when it's good. That's when it's got that energy. But you just reminded me, actually, of the moment during which I decided to go ahead with this project. And it was when we did a demo and you interviewed a young woman who was kind enough to come and donate some time to be your guinea pig. And I've never seen this happen before in an interview in my life. I've produced hundreds of interviews for other people, and this has never happened. I knew that we shared a value because it was your first time doing this. It was a strange format that was kind of thrust upon you. And you wouldn't let her leave.
She did say, haven't we been doing this long enough? Has it been an hour? Let me out of here.
She said, when can I leave? I've never heard, because if there is one lie common to every interview I've ever been a part of, or seen for that matter, it's so nice to be here. There's nowhere I'd rather. I'm here for as long as you want me. The only time when that's ever broken is when somebody gets offended and they just stand up and they throw their lapel mic down. And then that's a great moment. That's the one rare variation I've seen on the theme. But I've never, ever heard a guest say, how much longer is this going to be? When do I get to leave?
I'm not sure that that's a compliment to me.
No, but I knew.
But I was in my
you
defense.
You don't understand. We were collaborating in that moment because I knew that you knew that this was going to be edited and you were not going to let this fail. And I think we recorded 2 hours, but you were going to get 20 good minutes.
It was an hour. But you know what? I'm going to be serious for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making my film now, and I'm making a film about a very sensitive subject. And people say things to you, and you can hear the next question, but you're like, can I even ask that? And my answer to all documentary filmmakers and kids listening, ask. Even I am embarrassed sometimes by my own questions, but you put that in the film and their jaws are on the ground and you're like, that was the very last thing they said. In fact, I'll tell you one like weird thing. It turned into a trick, but I didn't mean it as a trick. When we're done, we have to get room tone. So I say, okay, we're done. Let's get room tone. Then everybody's quiet for 30 seconds. Then my crew knows, don't cut. And like between room tone and the next 5 minutes, when I say, okay, now we're really done, I could make 1,000 films from those 5 minutes.
My hope is that your natural curiosity about people and then something to do with whatever they make of you is going to result in who the hell knows what. But whatever it is, I'm hoping that it won't be like the same old I hear every day.
You're saying you can see how the show might work. I can see how it might work too, and also very clearly how it might not.
All right, that is episode zero of The Worst Podcast with Alan Zweig. Normally on the show, he's actually interviewing a notable person, a celebrity, and he got some. You know Paul F. Tompkins, Mr. Peanut Butter from BoJack Horseman? He's on The Worst Podcast. Steph Tolev, amazing comedian, is on The Worst Podcast. Rick Moody, who wrote The Ice Storm. Ron McLean is interviewed on The Worst Podcast. One of the most fabulous drag queens in Canada. It goes on and on. It doesn't go on that much further than that, but it's all on The Worst Podcast, a show unlike anything that we've ever published, unlike anything you've ever heard.
At a certain point with my daughter, I realized we have no tools to force them to do anything.
My only leverage is I threaten to take away cookies.
In Whippy, I was the only brown person on my street. I came home crying one time. I was like, Mom, somebody called me brown. And she was like, you are brown. Now yeah. I bully all white people. So that's why I'm here today, to bully you.
Okay, well, if you do a good job,
you let me know.
I'll accept it. This is the worst one I've done. And with the best guests. The best guests so far, I've done the worst job.
Okay, that is your Canada Land show. You can email me at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. Our website is canadaland.com. Today's show was produced by Katie Lauer and Kevin Sexton and executive producer Julie Shapiro, commissioning producer Alan Black. Tristan Capicchione is our audio editor and technical producer. Max Collins is our production manager. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it.
Karen Pugliese.
Jonathan Goldsby.
Yay! Editor-in-Chief of Canada Land, host and co-producer of Canada Land Back, and currently three time zones behind me. Today on the show, Q, are we not spies? A, we are Zevo. And as Newfoundland becomes the first province without a daily print newspaper in 120 years, maybe, we wonder, how do we keep talking shit about the news as there's less and less news about which to talk shit? Welcome back to Shortcuts, where we continue, for the time being and perhaps indefinitely, to talk about the news.
We're going to keep talking shit about the news.
Well, it's uncertain days for the province's only daily newspaper, The Telegram.
Major staff cuts are coming to The Telegram newspaper as Post Media turns the print edition into a weekly.
I find that quite concerning. We're definitely in an era where we need more information, more accurate, you know, verifiable, you know, journalist-produced information and not less.
You just keep on cutting and cutting, then you have less product and people stop consuming it because, you know, there's less there for them to buy. It's a brutal way to go.
So Postmedia's effort to acquire the newspapers from the distressed saltwater chain was ultimately successful. We talked about this a bit on the show a few weeks ago, back when it was first announced slash proposed, but it's gone through. The deal is closed. They have assumed control of the saltwater papers in Atlantic Canada, notably the Chronicle Herald in Halifax, as well as the Telegram in St. John's. And not terribly surprisingly, one of the first things they've done is basically end its life as a daily newspaper. It will now publish in print once a week without having spent any lived or even spent any time in Newfoundland. I can't speak directly to what that actually means on a day-to-day basis for people in St. John's and environs. But trying to figure out, like, what does this mean in the context of Canadian history? Like, when has this happened before, that there has been a Canadian province that has not had a daily newspaper since basically Canada, you know, well, obviously Canada in the modern sense of the modern state, 1867, and then provinces gradually joined after. That was roughly the era when daily newspapers became a thing, when newspapers were shifting from weekly or biweekly to dailies. And so as far as I can tell from by spending too many hours on many provincial archive websites, the last time there was a Canadian province that did not have a daily newspaper may have been a 2.5 month period in the late summer, early fall of 1905.
Wow.
So Saskatchewan became a province in September 1st, 1905. And then about mid-November, the Regina Leader switched from a weekly to a daily. As far as I could determine, that was the last time that a province, well, you know, had at least a few months of the province, no newspaper. And then before that, you have to go back another, seems like you have to go back at least another couple decades. Like,
well, you know, you're getting to Confederation, so.
I'll read a bit from the story that they had on the front page of the Telegram itself by Juanita Mercer. It's mid-morning in the Telegram newsroom. The sound of reporters tap, tap, tapping on their keyboards fills the air and light pours in from the huge windows. The sunlight shines on the brown wooden tabletop behind me where we've held so many story meetings. What will happen to that table? I find myself wondering aloud. Around it, reporters sat on half-broken chairs every morning, germinating the seeds of some of this province's biggest stories. Around it, editors huddled every afternoon to lay out the next day's paper. That's all history now. Friday morning was our last meeting around that table. Everyone will work from home now. After a 145-year run, this paper that stretched out between your hands is the last daily printed telegram. The People's Paper is now fully embracing that fast-paced world of online daily news where stories are quickly accessed with the tap of a smartphone screen. They say that's how a new generation of readers prefers to navigate their busy lives. So, goodness knows we've talked endlessly about the decline / death of media, what happens next, and all of that endlessly on this show and our other shows. I guess that one of the things I'm also reflecting as after having done Shortcuts now for 2.5 years and having reported on media and had media as a beat for many years before that, both at Canada Land and previously, what does happen as we move into an age where we're not talking shit about the news any less, but there's less news about which to talk? I mean, as long as there is media or communication in some form, it'll be possible to have a meta conversation around it. I'm not worried about that. What I'm wondering is, have we already or are we about to tilt into a place where there is more meta conversation than there actually is news?
We're already there. The number of podcasts that are just kind of rip and read or TikTok, and spending a lot of time on TikTok recently because I'm liking seeing the discussion around the American election through TikTok, but a lot of what they're saying is not accurate. We go through a fact-checking process on the show after we record, and we look and make sure that we've got things right.
Yeah, it's not an infallible one, but we definitely put the work in.
Yeah, we put the work in, and we correct if we get something wrong. There's also opinions, and opinions are fine, as long as it's based on some facts, you know. But I guess where I'm going with this is that I hear a lot of people just get basic facts wrong when they're describing, like, one of the big ones has been the Liberals. Carbon pricing has been a big one where everybody who's discussing it seems to get little elements of it wrong. And then, you know, it's almost like a telephone game. And it's really problematic because you're basing things not off original reporting. And there's a lot of speculation and there's mistakes being made with the facts. because not everybody who's doing this work is following like a rigorous journalistic policy or rigorous fact-checking process.
Yeah, it's not even so much a kids these days thing as that